Hello and welcome to Life in the Mind, a neurodivergent podcast by neurodivergent people. I'm Marie Spear.
And I'm Joy Amy Wigman.
And we are back with Nick Misonovich. I'm overthinking it.
You did it well. You got it.
And I was just like halfway through. Oh no. And so by doing that, immediately back to that. Yes. And that ties in well to comedy, which is our topic for today.
Hey.
Muck-ups, which some people laugh at and you go, oh, that was just me doing something wrong. Like, oh, maybe I could make that into an hour-long show.
Edinburgh for review.
Because you have both been stand-up comedians or are.
Yeah.
I have been. I just haven't been for about 3 years now because I just don't have the time anymore. So.
Fair enough.
Yes.
Yeah. We were talking about that actually, weren't we, this morning? Having the time and energy to do stand-up. Yeah. I tend to throw my comedy energy into scripts these days because I do more playwriting, but I have a massive interest in comedy. It's like one of my big things that I love.
Making people laugh.
Me and Nick used to do a sketch and improv comedy show called Knowing Smirk, which went on for a couple of years and was like monthly. Between us, we've written hundreds of sketches that we can't remember because every month it's a blur.
I've got them all saved. I've got quite a few saved. Sent
to
my own sketches and quite a few. I think I've got a couple of other people's. It's always nice to look back on and think, oh my God, what was I thinking when I wrote this?
I look back at them and go, how did I not know I was autistic? My obsession with the repetition of threes. I used to get into a lot of trouble for writing sketches where characters would repeat things.
Yeah.
So we're going to the castle. The castle? Yeah, the castle. What castle? The castle. I love repetition in sketches. It makes me feel so happy.
That's interesting. I wonder if there's an echolalia angle to that, which is the mouth feel of words and sounds and actually the noise feel of them. It's like good sounding words when it's just like, I want you to say that over and over again.
Oh yeah, we sort of had that with Droitwich.
Victoria
Woodhead always said that there were comedy words and there are comedy numbers.
Yeah.
And you know because they feel right.
Yeah.
Droitwich is a definite one that we used a lot.
Yeah. I mean, my brain's just going to Pili-Pala.
Pili-Pala?
Which is butterfly in Welsh.
Oh, lovely.
And it's just such a lovely word, Pili-Pala. Billy Bala, Billy Bala, Billy Bala, Billy Bala, Billy Bala.
I know of the stand-up comedians that I know and the comedians, like the sketch comedians that I know, I'm trying to think of any of them that aren't neurodivergent. Maybe Francis? I don't know. They don't, not a lot of them use their neurodivergence as part of their...
Yeah, it's different generally, like, maybe as a baseline, or you're actively including it with commentary on it or tapping into it.
We had a friend who used to do stand up and she doesn't anymore, and I'm very sad that she doesn't do it anymore. And I always thought of her as my autistic friend because she was the first, she was like my baseline of adults who are autistic and open about it because I didn't know anybody else who was.
Yeah.
And so she did a set about being autistic. And she had this wonderful joke in it of like, I've got a daughter and I'm just like any other mother, you know, just because I'm autistic, it doesn't mean that I don't have hundreds of photos of my daughter on my phone. Although it's just so I make sure I pick up the right kid after school. It's absolutely wonderful.
Yes.
But I don't know. Do you think there's sort of a
crossover?
Yeah, there's like a part of your brain that's kind of woken up. By being neurodivergent?
I don't know. I think it sort of helps if you can sort of see the world in a slightly different way. If you have to have sort of weird thoughts in a way. And
You're on the outside looking in.
Yes, it's that.
You're seeing the nuances and the grey areas and kind of go pulling things up on like, that doesn't quite make sense. That's inconsistent logic. Yeah. But in kind of a funny way, it's really ironic that that exists like that.
Yeah, I was. It was one thing I remember happening, and I never used this in a stand-up, but I wish I had, because a friend of mine said they were going off to be to train to be a driving instructor. I said, OK, so you're going to teach people how to drive? He said, yes. And someone's teaching you how to teach people how to drive? And he said, yes. I said, who taught them? Presumably there must be someone who teaches other people how to teach people how to drive. And then there's someone who...
Yeah. Who's the original
the
person?
The system works, don't question it.
We are the questioners. Yes. We are the questioners.
But it's when you start thinking of that sort of logic. I mean, I've been watching a lot of Seinfeld recently, and you know, his mind is very much just everyday things we don't question, and he starts to sort of question them, and
he is also neurodivergent.
Is he?
Yeah.
Oh wow.
Mm. Yeah. Yes. I was reading articles this morning. I was brushing up on my thing. In my reading, I had to stop writing people down because I sort of ran out of oomph.
Yeah.
Because my shortlist.
Yeah.
You've got Fern Brady, Lucy Beaumont, Joe Wells, Sam Campbell, Rob Beckett, Russell Howard, Johnny Vegas, Sue Perkins, Chaparral Corsandy, Rod Gilbert. I just carried on. I was like, there's no point in me carrying on writing down. So basically all of the comedians.
Yes, all the comedians.
All of the comedians. Yes. And I think one of the things that I think has highlighted a lot of neurodivergent comedians and sort of celebrated it, not in a toxic positivity kind of way, but in a, you know...
This is something that you can excel at, where your brain does actually work really well and can be applied to.
Is Taskmaster.
Oh, yeah.
I've never seen that.
But they...
Such a good example.
There seems to be at least one person who's neurodivergent every series. And it really... so the comedian Fern Brady, I think, really hit the big time from doing Taskmaster. And she is very open about being autistic and is, but it's not part of her comedy. Mm. Like, she will talk about it just in the way that, like, you will also talk about, I don't know, using public bathrooms. But it's not
the defining factor.
No.
It's more just like, this is part of me and I write comedy.
Yeah, and I write comedy about my life, so this is part of my life. But like, loads of people on that list have been on Taskmaster, and I don't know if it's just that's the best of the neurodivergent.
It's a really good way to see different ways of being coming out, is what I find about Taskmaster. You find a fascinating, just the way that people interact with stuff. I mean, it's like a psychological experiment in many ways.
It's just problem solving.
This is fascinating. How do different people approach this thing? Yeah, it is problem solving, and in controlled conditions, and in kind of, I mean, it's not obviously not lab conditions, but it's brilliant for just kind of, they have a lab. It's a lab condition. They're just interesting lab. But it's so good for that. And it does, it really speaks to that thing of, is there an intrinsic link between, I mean, I think one of the fascinating things I really find is how many people I know who are neurodivergent, actually including myself, who kind of people think are as funny, whereas they don't necessarily think of themselves as funny.
Mm.
And they're just kind of saying things and people break down laughing and they're like, I have no idea where you're laughing. I was genuinely saying that
yes,
as a thing, or I was just getting something wrong. And then you realise after, oh, and sometimes, like for me, that's developed my sense of humour, I think. My sense of humour is partly because of that kind of thing. So I like wit, wordplay, irony,
you
sarcasm.
You have to be able to laugh at yourself so you find other things to laugh about.
I think when I was going through school, I would say things that people would laugh at and never quite understand what was funny. But so I don't know, it's them being comedy. Yep. You're taking control of the laughter now. Yeah. So it's, you know, it's like, how many, I mean, even like Roy Chubby Brown comes on in that daft suit and the flying cap to make himself look like a total idiot because he takes control of his image.
You
know? Yeah, so, playing the character.
Yeah. Immediately address the first thing that the audience is going to think.
Yeah, taking control of that and actually playing the space. And then you can also, you can then be framing. You kind of go, okay, so that's what people found funny within. You can analyze it, which autistic brain's great. Looking back and going, I said this, this is how I said it, this is how I was sitting, this is how other people were sitting, all these details were happening. Then that's why people found it funny. Okay, cool. I can now emphasize these, yes. Tweak these settings in my interactions with this people in this paradigm.
Well, our friend that I was talking about, who is a stand-up, she would use a decibel reader. So that she could look through the audio files and see where people were laughing more in order to work out what bits of her set were working. Because she said, in the moment, I can't judge that.
Yeah.
But going back and looking at the raw data, I can do it.
That's such a good idea.
Well, not with a decibel reader, but Ken Doddy used to have an assistant who would just sit out in the audience and just note which jokes got the laughs.
Again, it's the same.
That's really good, especially like because there are certain venues where you could not hear the audience in the slightest.
That's true.
From whatever you're doing on the stage.
And also being in Cheltenham, because like one of the reasons that Knowing Smirk was called Knowing Smirk was because a Cheltenham audience doesn't so much laugh, but kind of like smirks knowingly. Very good, very droll.
Oh, that's interesting. But now I'm thinking, like, so many different types of venues where you either just can't hear yourself, you can't hear the audience, you can't be heard by the audience, or like you can't connect with them, and you can't, those nuances. And actually then if you're coming and you're going, I know that this went down really well in this situation, why did it not in the slightest, why did I get things thrown at me in this situation? And that's an interesting, but then the analytical brain comes back to that really.
In my reading this morning, there was an article that gave the sensationalist headline of Do autistic people have a sense of humour? Have you not seen my list of comedians? How dare you?
Everyone's been scarred by the Rain Man with Dustin Hoffman just repeating the Who's On First, and turns out the character he was based on wasn't even autistic.
We were looking for some statistics, and we looked on YouGov because that's a good polling thing, and the American version of YouGov on their autism page, the cover photo that they've got is a picture of Rain Man. Like, that in itself is so highly offensive and inappropriate.
This is just cementing.
This is not going to be good.
I remember that film that gives me a blow-by-blow account of what it's like to have this curse and have someone in your life that is cursed in this way. It's like, that's not right. That's none of that is true.
How dare you? I'm a delight.
What are you doing? There's so many other...
I find that a weird stereotype, the idea that autistic people can't understand sarcasm and don't have a sense of humour.
Although I do switch massively. Extreme, just wordplay based humour, sarcasm, irony, puns, and doing playing around with all of the nuances of ha 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 and cadence and to completely straight, completely literal. I'm taking, I don't understand. Why is that funny? I don't understand the, what? You haven't finished your sentence, you just left it. Oh, because there was something implied. Okay, cool. What? And then I just hit a tiredness point and my brain just flips. And I'm just so glad I don't understand.
I'm so glad you said that, because I absolutely do that.
Yeah.
And living with somebody who is constantly joking, I'll go from banter to, why would you say that about me? That's really mean. My brain sort of switches and can't take the jokey nuance anymore. And suddenly I'll just get really upset.
I just get to a point of just, do you not compute, basically. I just kind of just file not found. What are you saying? You need to say it in the rules of how grammar and stuff works. Otherwise, okay. What?
What sort of got you wanting to do comedy then, Nick?
I really got into comedy when I started watching Whose Line Is It Anyway? Improv, because I was just amazed by it, and I thought, I really, really want to have a go at that, because it's acting, but it's not. You don't... you don't have to get it totally right.
Yeah,
it's nothing
you have
there.
To be right all the time.
Yes, you don't have to get the, you know, you can make up something up. So yeah, I did a bit of that. But also I grew up with loving Monty Python, and I think maybe that had a bit of a detrimental effect on my writing at first, because I just tried to be weird. And, you know, looking back on it, Monty Python, it's just, it is a lot more structured than you think. Yeah. It's not just totally weird. There is, because I'm very pleased. I read a interview with some of them, and they said they always had these writing room sessions that would go on for hours and hours, where they'd just be arguing, saying, there is a sheep hanging from the roof. What do you mean it's a sheep? It has to be a goat. No, it's a, you idiot. It's a sheep. That's funny. It just reminded me of some of our smirk writers.
We've definitely done right for sure that, haven't we?
But yeah.
It's not the arguments over the particular swear words.
Yes.
Funnier if it's that one.
Yes, yes.
Yeah, but for syntax, it should be that one.
Yes.
Yeah, for ages and ages. You do get obsessed.
Yes, yes. I always got obsessed if there's something wasn't like factually correct, because I just thought, well, it'd be funnier because there'd be someone who knows that fact, and they'd be like, oh yes, yeah, they've done their
the
research.
Speed of an African swallow in flight.
Yes. Exactly. Yes.
Cardinal Wolsey.
Cardinal Wolsey.
Nick in particular, we always used to joke about Nick making jokes about Cardinal Wolsey.
That's good.
He only made one, I think.
Yes,
only
one.
Just one word. Yeah, just one joke about Cardinal Wolsey, and that was it. It was Cardinal Wolsey jokes forever. Yeah.
So where did we get to?
Well, I've got Cardinal Wolsey.
Yes. Yes. But yeah, so I did a few sort of comedy nights when I was about 18, working with my brother was very into it as well. So we used to write stuff together. We used to perform together with a couple of our friends, one of whom was the sadly late great Ian Baldwin. Aww. So yes, it was lovely guy. But yes. Yeah. So, yeah, but he was, yeah, very funny. We did a couple of gigs that we just died on our arses. But that's always good.
You've got to die on your arse if you want to come out.
Yes. If you don't, then you're always going to think you're great. But if you die on your arse at least one gig, you think, well, I've got to make sure that doesn't happen again.
Yeah.
So
it's good. It's good data.
Yes.
Yeah.
So
I think a lot of comedy does come out of miscommunication as well, you know, suggestions from the audience. The one I was thinking of, I probably can't say on broadcast, so I'll bring it up later. But just a lot of comedy does come from miscommunication.
Yeah,
and some people being on one one page and somebody being on another. As the lovely people from Horrible Histories in their film Bill says, it's a series of funny misunderstandings about Shakespeare. So maybe there's a lot of sort of there's a lot around dissonance. You know, if you're viewing something differently, you're gonna have that skewed view that some people are gonna have thought about but not expressed.
Yes.
Yeah, the whole you're already outside of the box, kind of going, oh wait, I know that I'm slightly displaced from this standardised, this norm, and so you can see those points of and pick up on them.
And the thing I've of the comedians that I know are neurodiverse, the one thing they all seem to have in common is that they only punch up.
And in comedy, you should
never punch down.
No.
Because it just makes it mean. And I think from being in a position where people will quite often have derided you for being the person that you are, the punching up comes from a good place.
Yeah. Yes.
Almost like you were saying earlier, in terms of that kind of almost taking control of the laughter, because that made me think of kind of bullying and people laughing at you because you're weird or something, or because you couldn't do something. Then you can actually take some of those situations where it was a bit strange and sanitize it, but actually emphasize the bit that is funny, isn't it?
Yeah, but I think one of the things, going back to sort of punching up and punching down, one of the things I'm very careful about is not to use my dyspraxia to turn myself into too much of an idiot, because then it's sort of like if you ever saw Life on Mars, and in one of these series, Sam Tyler's boss comes in when he's just a constable, and he's black in the 70s, and he just makes 5 minutes of jokes about himself being black, and it's like really, it just looks so awful because he has to do that to fit in with the culture, and it's very easy to sort of, I'm going to put myself down to make myself look funny. I mean, I've done a couple of sort of self-deprecating remarks, but I'd rather just use that sort of weird way of thinking. Okay, what weird things can I think of, and how am I going to sort of turn that into something funny? Something. I mean, one of the things I like to do is just get irrationally angry about things. That's always been. One of my bits I used to do was about Justin Bieber, where I just go on about a 5 minute rant on. Well, I don't think it was 5 minutes. Probably that would be too unbearable. About 2 minutes about how much I hated. I'm thinking of I'd used to improv a load of unpleasant things I wanted to do with him, and I just ended up saying I didn't even know who Justin Bieber is.
Just go off on one about something, and then just come back.
Because that's quite an ADHD trait, isn't it?
Just gradually
angry about something, and then 5 minutes later going, I don't even care about that thing.
It's also quite an interesting thing of picking up on the details. Yes. That's not right, it's not the rule in my brain that is how that is. So therefore, and that kind of thing. That thing you were saying about, it's almost not making yourself the fool guy without making yourself the complete fool.
You can fit into
a situation without being just this trope and actually damaging something. You can do, I can use myself as this great foil and actually a way to interact with people and relax into it. And actually, you're opening up in a way. Mm. You're opening up and making people relax a bit more and, cool, this is a space where we can laugh at ourselves, as you were saying earlier, Jamie, without waiting too much the other way.
Of course, in classical times, the fool, the classical fool, was the idiot who could actually take the piss out of the king.
And
it's a really good way into doing that, fooling element, bringing it into being, ooh, actually, I can now, because I have shown myself, I have self-knowledge that I am flawed, I'm in a better place to therefore stand and judge other people because I know that I am not perfect.
Yes.
Because people will relate to that much more betterer.
There we go. Much more better.
I'm going to go with betterer because my brain ran out of steam.
Well, as our brains are running out of steam, should we wrap it up there? Yeah. And
sounds good.
Thank you so much for coming to talk to us again, Nick. Oh,
thank you for having me.
Oh, it's been a delight.
It's been a lot of fun.
I would love it if you went back to doing some stand-up when you've got some time so I can come and see you again, because I do love it.
Oh, thank you. Yes.
Thank you for listening. That's all we have time for this week, folks. Don't forget to like, subscribe and comment. Follow us on Instagram at Life in the Mind. Our other socials are linked in the bio. Bye.